And welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio with Rich and James, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes, and we'll have your car all cleaned out for you, sir. SmackDown was live from Utah this week, Monday Night Raw, Anaheim, California, and then obviously NXT. In a week building up to Elimination Chamber this weekend, which I will cover next week on the show. But let's jump right into it. We know what these shows are like. No dilly-dally, no beating around the bush. Just do a quick shout out to, as I am like the WWE channel, and I've been at the start of these shows doing a kind of run through of the past week. Instead of going through what's currently happening with WWE at the start here, I'm just going to recommend go and listen to Trish and Sarah's latest podcast here on the network. Highly recommend going to listen to that. They did a deep dive this week. They did a really, really good job. Anyway, with that said, let's jump on over to Utah. I think pretty soon is how they talk in Utah. Yep. Let's jump over to SmackDown, which is live from Utah.
But tonight we fix it, because tonight is about history. Tonight is the first night that we can say The Rock is a member of the Bloodline.
Roman and The Rock together in the Bloodline, finally. Ultimate form, big boss for the end of the game. Tonight, we confirm that The Rock is in the Bloodline, making the faction arguably its most visually powerful before its fall. I say visually because, in actuality, the cracks are more apparent than ever, even though you would think that at their strongest is really what numbers-wise they've replaced Jey Uso with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So they should surely be at their biggest strength. An amazing heel dress code for The Rock. Like, gone is team, bring it. Here is Ricky Starks. Like a mix together of his amazing shirt from way back when and Stone Cold Steve Austin's jacket. Just put the two together in an amazing apparel for Rocky. Like, Rocky, in his promo, he really ripped into Utah, really ripped into Cody. I love the heel character work, not getting Cody's story right. Like, you think you just get another shot. That's not how this works. To which, obviously, in reality, it's because he won the Rumble. He didn't just get another shot. He had to force his way in to get another shot. He had to win the Royal Rumble. But everything in his promo, like, felt purposeful. Like, him pointing somewhat in Roman's direction for the camera as he delivers the line about promising to make him fail. Him as in Cody, but where he's pointing. For the hard camera, it looks like he's pointing directly at Roman. Rocky was really ripping. But the bit that made me laugh most was the stuff ripping into Utah. Like, you've set a new record, a new attendance record, the all-time record for the largest gathering of trailer park trash The Rock has ever seen. Like, finally, this is the Rocky I loved all those years ago. This is the Team Bring It Rock? Nah. There's something about the Team Bring It Rock which felt like a big superstar, but wasn't that interesting a character, really, to get into. He was doing Rock stuff. Was this is actual Rock stuff from the 90s, for better or worse. It's obviously a little bit like somebody who's used to make all the same jokes from the 90s coming back and making those same jokes again, and then the young kids are like, wait, what? Or whatever. Showing the sitcom Friends to some, like, the teenagers from today, they're like, why are you making so many homophobic jokes? Like, what's that? So there was the zeitgeist of its time, and it's not the zeitgeist of its time. And also when The Rock's doing the same act now, I was like, it feels a little bit outdated. But what he's actually doing with his character is great, and I love all of that. A story you and your 50 wives will want to tell your 600 inbred children one day. Just amazing. It's ripping into Utah. I've missed The Rock telling audience members he'll smack the herpes off their lips. Especially when we're coming out of that PG era and we're entering a new age, which is seemingly still WWE being PG on its face, but we're getting the odd little... There's a little bit more stuff in there. Still definitely PG. But you get to dance around with a bit. It's not as strict as it was. But that whole segment did an amazing job. Oh, the main thing I've not talked about is right at the end when they're all raising their fingers and The Rock, instead of acknowledging with his finger raised, he also puts out his thumb in the shape of a L on his forehead. It's just like, what are you? But personally, this was a really good, just bringing the two together to set us into that, whatever the WrestleMania thing is going to be. They've really foreshadowed a tag team match, and this feels like a great way to get us to that point. But of course, it also seemed to signify potential cracks, and that's kind of what I mean by this should be the Bloodline in their ultimate form. They should be the most dangerous they have ever been with this lineup. However, it's also very clear at the same time that a lot of it is covering over huge cracks in the stable. The family's got massive problems. And I guess when you strain them and when you put them into the high-stress situations of WrestleMania, what's going to happen to those cracks? For me, that set this all up wonderfully. All of that, yes, you've got the hype of The Rock and Roman finally teaming up on the same side, but you've got all that other stuff just eating away at the background as well. And it felt purposeful, because I feel like if you're analysing a finger point across and the way the camera was framed as being purposely, maybe possibly telling something, it's like, well, I'm also going to analyse the rest of it of also doing that. It's all doing something or convincing you of a character trait or for some reason. Big fan of this. I look forward to watching whatever happens on night one happen. I've got no idea what it's going to curtail into, but I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, let's move on to the Elimination Chamber qualifiers that happened on this SmackDown show. Both qualifiers having ringside distractors on this one. At first, the men's Kevin Owens defeated Dom Dom Mysterio. They loved Dom Dom in Utah. R-Truth costing his stablemate. Still thinks Kevin Owens is the Miz for some reason. That's why he's helping him. And yeah, it was a qualifier. I'll give them that. It kicked off the show and it was perfectly fine. Got Kevin Owens into the lineup. The Miz versus US champion Logan Paul. 12-year-olds going mad with their prime bottles as their man gets in. Paul integrating yet another Adam Page move into his offense. The women's side was Zelina Vega versus Tiffany Stratton. Oof, Stratton got Vega with that prettiest moonsault ever. Great to see them immediately throw the lass onto pay-per-view. Really behind that. And in the match as well, the LWO versus Legado del Fantasma rivalry caused Zelina's distraction defeat in this one. But also Naomi returning with new music. Honestly, a theme that helps make her feel like a bigger deal. She faced Elba Fire in a match that was mostly just there just to remind you of Naomi's offense and her character and the way that she kind of, way that she rolls. The poor Scottish lass made to tap. Hilariously called a new sub. My God, she's brought a new submission with her. Nope, doing it before she left WWE. it's been quite a while. It's a decent finisher. I quite like it as a submission thing. We'll see what Naomi gets to do under the Triple H leadership, because obviously we only seen her under Vince. Also, I'm a massive fan of Tiffany Stratton, so great to see her getting into the Elimination Chamber just right off the bat. Her work on Raw was also great character work, much needed character work. She's just not had a lot of time to do a lot of it on SmackDown yet, so that was also great to see. In terms of like the little things on this show, LOL at LA Knight calling Drew an old-timer. Pretty certain he's older than Drew. Also, as much as I enjoy Bate and Dunn, they're not very good at reading out a script for a promo. It's the one thing, I would definitely say, that on this entire show, the one part that felt the most scripted was Bate and Dunn trying to do somewhat semi-natural banter off of a script. It wasn't grand. But to be fair, neither man's been particularly grand at that side of it. But especially like this, where they're properly scripted. Like, oh, this didn't work. Here's a great example of the script being a detriment. If you've just told them to talk and get their points across, I get a feeling that it'd be a lot stronger of a promo than what this ended up being, where they're both trying to relay a script, and neither of them are that great. So it was amazing in the ring. I would give them that, but they're not going to get over with stuff like that. Well, they're not going to get over with me. Stuff like that. Also, Bron Breakker announced for the Smackers roster makes Aldis seem like a competent, busy general manager, the way that they represented it with him coming out saying that I've been busy getting all this stuff, and here he is, it's Bron Breakker. And it makes Bron Breakker look like a star, because the general manager, who's being made to look competent by busy trying to chase him, was chasing him, and therefore he must be a big deal, right? Because he wanted him. The new production with The Dunn is Dead continuing. There's a load from Raw, there's a load from here, SmackDown as well. There was a low angle, slow zoom in on the ring, like we were watching from the perspective of a few rows back, and they also didn't cut away from it. It was like a slow zoom in, and we got to soak in the shot as well. I mean, most of these things would never happen under Dunn, but especially returning from an ad break with a slow zoom into a thing. One like Raw, they had the cameraman walk down the entrance ramp as it went in, and then it even stayed on the action as it was like a hot tag to get back into the action, and that's when it cut, which was great stuff. the darkened banners with just the logo continuing to bode well for a hope for me when it comes to Elimination Chamber's paid sponsor product integration. If it's black background with their logo on it instead of the bright purple, bright green, bright Cheetos orange, whatever, everything, this is a much, much better way to do it. The wrestlers' 2K24 ratings are popping up during matches as well. This is the first time I didn't think they did it last week on Raw, but it's the first time I noticed it here, and it's a very natural way, even though you are saying the people in this match have a low rating on the video game, I'm just like, should you show Johnny Gargano's rating on this show? That's one of my things. It's also a very smart way to promote the video game without having Michael Cole do the ad read for it over and over and over. Instead, they're using it to somewhat naturally integrate it into the stuff that's relevant by showing the people in the matches and showing their ratings. Like, yeah. The action replay for one of the matches also had no SmackDown graphics overlaid, just adding for me to the nice and clean and lot less busy flash on our screens. If I'm right, it might have just not played or whatever. I really like the way that it looks. For me, that's how New Japan do it. When New Japan do a replay, they will just play it back to you in slow motion. They won't do like a big transition into the side-by-side screen, then press play on the side-by-side happening. It just feels a lot cleaner to be able to just show it back on the replay or whatever. Especially as the whole arena's got the SmackDown colours all around it. Don't also need a massive overlay. But I think that's my personal thing, is it back in the day, in the noughties especially, it would really give it this air of like a high quality production. But because the production is a high quality everywhere else, you don't really need it. I mean, when it came to one like Raw, I'm pretty certain that they didn't do it once. they had the overlays back on again. And this might have just been a one-time thing, but I watched it as like, that's how New Japan do it, and I much prefer it. I much prefer the less busy screens. The shot was made even less busy by lighting the crowd with a clean light, rather than like bathing them in the show's red or blue colours. It works so much better. Then they go and spoil it all by showing a whacking great AR graphic. It's like, well, baby steps. For all I know, they've got a contract with the RA, with the augmented reality graphics team, and they've got to fulfill the contract. It's obviously people that like the graphics. I don't know who they are. I don't know who we need to bribe to get them to stop. I don't know who needs to be set on them to stop the graphics. Just dawned on me as well that they're now starting every show with an exterior shot of the arena as well, before transitioning to a couple of our competitors walking into the arena. Then we get to see the arena. I think it's a really clever way to start the show, where you're essentially being gradually walked into the arena, then you get to watch the show, instead of it being like immediately opening up in there or fading from black into the arena. It's like, no, show the outside, this is where we are, you can get all the plugs for the area too. Then transition into people we're going to see in action as they walk into the arena, and which walks us into the arena as well. I think it's very smart. But anyway, that was SmackDown. And the reason that I spent more time on the production stuff was made just because, apart from Roman Rocky, it was the show that was building, it was getting people Elimination Chamber pay-per-view without a lot really happening. Not really a lot to talk about, but a lot of production notes, which is like a huge, massive thumbs up. And Roman Rocky as well. That's a huge thumbs up for me. So we've got this, and then we've just got to wait a little bit, because the Chamber's going to be addressing the Raw side of stuff. So there isn't really a lot for the show coming out of this. As far as I know, they're not going to be in Australia either. So it's just kind of like, it's got to kill some time, fill some air without this really proceeding anywhere. Cody's not got a lot to do. He'll get a nice pop in Australia. He'll hit the crossroads in Grayson Waller. And hey, the segment might go half an hour. And just be building up to him hitting that crossroads. Like, oh, okay, whatever. But anyway, that is the end of Final Mix SmackDown. And with that, let's move on over to Anaheim, California.
And Jay gonna go up top, top rope! Uso splash! Jay's gonna do it! Finally back!
Gunther just doesn't have a bad match. He just doesn't have a bad match. Gunther versus Jey Uso for the Intercontinental Championship. The forever champion Gunther being challenged by the incredibly popular Jey Uso. I want to say there was one part that I really liked was Gunther just shutting Pat down with the stare. As Pat's going crazy with the Jey Uso stuff, and then Gunther just stares at him. Pat just quiets down. Like, I did like that. For as overly energetic as Pat can come across sometimes, yeah, Gunther just shutting him down like that was a really nice, like a back counterbalance to that. Also, the ending coming with Jimmy Uso coming down for the interference, which was set up earlier in the show when they seemed to be jumping Cody Rhodes. Either they were sent there to attack Cody and then Jimmy went out on his own to cost Jay, or they were sent there with two reasons. But also what it does is... Actually, no, I'll talk about the match first. I'll talk about Drew... I realise I'm transitioning. I completely stopped talking about Gunther versus Jey Uso. But yeah, Gunther Jey Uso was a great match, and it got to that point where Jey Uso is going for the splash. He's got the champion down. The momentum has swung back and forth enough. The crowd is really behind Jey Uso hitting this splash. And yep, then comes Jay to cost him the entire thing. And I'm assuming this is what set up their match for WrestleMania. Jey Uso had the champion down. It looked like he generally could win this title. There's so many patterns within a Gunther match, as we've seen them before, where for like a sequence or for a flow, they all really convince us the other guy's winning, only for Gunther to kick out or for something to happen. And this occasion, it was just fully costing Jimmy the match, giving Gunther the win. Well, what would Gunther have won and kicked out just like he has with other guys? Would he have actually done that here or not? Plus, it also sets up nicely for whoever's next in line for when he gets to that spot again, but this time there's no bloodline or whatever we want to go. Let's say it's Gunther versus Sami Zayn at WrestleMania and there's no impairment ringside to cost him anything. You can do this the sacred nature of the ring kind of stuff where at the biggest show at WrestleMania, there will be no interference level or something like that. So it'd be different of what happens when Gunther's in that spot against somebody like that where there is no bloodline that's going to interfere. I like it. I like what it sets up for everybody. It's really good stuff. And of course, Gunther just doesn't have a bad match. So obviously, as a match, as a chest-chopping battle, it was obviously great as well. But this does feed into the show that opened, the match that opened the show. Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes, which was the first time the Bloodline interfered. One little note as well was it was a telly match that got a promo video beforehand. Yet another thing showcasing how much The Dunn is Dead is improving the production of this show. And a decent telly bout it was. Cody is so incredibly over. The match gave him plenty of time for an opening telly bout. In the end, Cody on top after a mighty Cody Cutter from the top rope. Drew kicking out, but that igniting the Bloodline interference. Jimmy Uso charging down. But it was a distraction for Solo to spike Cody and set McIntyre up to the Claymore for the win. Something that is exactly the same again on purpose. The reason that really hit me was, I've said before, if you're trying to figure out what stories that they are telling, just listen to the commentary. It's not subtle, really. Like often, Triple H has added in a bit more subtlety. And purposely, the commentary will sometimes not comment on a thing that's happened. But if you want to just know definitely what the story is. And here, after the match, Michael Cole was playing the note so hard that McIntyre was a hypocrite for winning off of a bloodline interference, which I really, really liked. And the other note that it plays is this is Cody losing because of a bloodline interference in the exact same way that he did at WrestleMania. Beat for beat, almost exactly the same, the way that the interference plays out. And it's like that is entirely done on purpose. Just a lesson to Cody. If you do the exact same thing you did last year, you will lose. You need to do something different. And that was reinforced where after the ad break, Cody's in the doctors and Seth Rollins comes in to check on him as well. Setting up Cody and the Avengers. Cody and friends as our hero learns it's okay to lean on friendship in difficult times. I feel like this is exactly what this is all setting up. Where to defeat the Bloodline, he's going to get every single person that the Bloodline has wronged onto his side. This match also sets up Drew McIntyre as not being involved in that. Just because they have him so dead set on his path to becoming world champion that he's perfectly fine with now using that bloodline interference to get him momentum. Because it doesn't benefit him, he's not going to be interfering. And this set up that really well. Showing him actively having that character switch in this match was kind of huge for the next step where Cody will try and get the Avengers together. I'm assuming obviously that will include like Seth Rollins, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens is on the other show, but you can use him. There's obviously everybody else that Roman has screwed over time that you can use within this feud. But obviously for Cody to do that, I feel like in a Vince world, he would have just said it and then done it. Whilst here, this is on television, in world, they've given you a reason for Cody to make that jump, to make that decision of okay, I need to actually lean on these people who want to help me. And the most natural thing to do that is the Seth Rollins character, kind of those two leaning on each other. Purely because of what's happened so far with them teaming up to then face Rock and Roman on Night 1 of WrestleMania possibly, is that can also be used as him leaning on the friendship to help take on the Bloodline for the title as well. And that was again reinforced for Jay in the main event. So we didn't just feel it in the Cody world. And these people, oh, I didn't say Jey Uso in the people that could band together. But they all need to band together to take these guys down. But that lesson needs to be taught to them first. Otherwise, it just doesn't feel quite natural and quite right, which it probably would do in a Vince era. Whilst this is actively ahead of time, being like, no, no, we're going to show you why they decide to band together before they do. Also, throughout the show, there was the Last Chance Battle Royal Women's Elimination Chamber final spot. Stuff of note, Raquel Rodriguez returned. Lopez and Vega continued their Legado LWO feud. Ivy Nile got to eliminate Natalia and then rain fire before getting eliminated by Baszler and Stark. The final four were Mia Yim, Raquel Gonzalez, Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. Meeching out for Raquel to fight the 2-on-1 odds. Except Chelsea Green was never eliminated. And now she's eliminated. I was like, oh, okay. Because I wasn't sure if I wanted Chelsea Green do comedy spots in the Elimination Chamber or have Rodriguez make this big return. Because she can feel like a certain big deal in this match. And that's kind of her character motivation. If I have just returned, I'm going to make a statement in the chamber. Like, I'm not a massive fan of the competitors in a match all one at a time coming out and speaking their mind. Like, Stratton got the much-needed mic time. The different dynamics of the match were set up before each of the individual characters and their motivations, but I've always found that having your characters come out and just speak their motivations to be, you know, the most boring way of doing it. Like, as much as I've just praised the Cody Rhodes and the Bloodline stuff, part of that is just because you're shown visually the reasons for those characters to have said motivations rather than the character coming out and just speaking them. This segment, its characters coming out and speaking the motivations. It's like, it's the most boring way to do it. However, what it did do is set up all the different dynamics for the match, which is something that the men's chamber is desperately kind of lacking. You've got Drew McIntyre, but there isn't really anyone else. There's quite a few in there, I guess, like LA Knight and maybe Kevin Owens, where it's just like, well, it's a title to go for, so why not? Whilst Drew McIntyre is a character with his motivation so clearly stated and set, he feels like he stands out in that match. Whilst for the women's one, they pretty much gave everybody their own different dynamic for it. But yeah, it's funny to be there, like a little awkward walkout, one at a time promo segment. Like, I've always disliked the structure, but this did the job well enough? Question mark? Well. Other things of note, Truth got an R-Truth chant after his silly little interview, and no, it wasn't piped in. What is this craziness? Also, there was the UFC challenge made on Raw. Like, I don't watch MMA. Didn't know who that wanker was. I don't know anything. Hopefully, it's not at WrestleMania. And hopefully, it is just a product integration thing with under Endeavor showing us what it is. It's the future. That segment was the integration between WWE and UFC, both under Endeavor. That is the future. But you know what? 3-hour shows need time to fill. Anyway, that was the end of Monday Night Raw live from Anaheim. I thought it was a really fun show, but the Raw's been in a little thing of you don't necessarily need to watch the shows for the next week to roll about. However, I feel like this week the in-ring competition was solid enough that you're going to get an amazing time. I've not even talked about Chad Gable versus Ifar, which I'm massively impressed as well. A sign of it is the crowd not really responding once they both walk out. And then they're going crazy for Gable by the end of it. But yeah, it was a show that absolutely flew by, given that I sometimes struggle with the Raws. There is always that problem of the third hour, just momentum-wise being so difficult to keep up, and more often than not, they don't succeed. However, here, they had the massive IC title match, and that really helps. It just massively boosted it up. And with that, we move on down back to NXT, where, yeah, there was a thing that happened this week on NXT. There's a little thing, to talk about. So let's move on down to NXT. Say hello to the kids.
Big splash off the top. Is this going to be enough to retain the NXT Women's Championship? Valkyria overcomes the odds.
All was going so well. The NXT Women's Championship main event between Shotzi and Lyra Valkyria. All was going perfectly until a DDT to the apron resulted in Shotzi being injured and out for 9 months. It was like, oh, okay, that kind of sucks, and suddenly your main event's completely shaken up. Yeah, obviously, shout out to Shotzi to get better, but she wasn't even the one taking the DDT, which makes it an even more like, oh, that sucks, kind of injury off of almost nothing, which is also why she wasn't on SmackDown with this NXT show being recorded. It then meant that we got Shotzi not on her Elimination Chamber qualifying match on SmackDown, but then she's wrestling in the main event here. It's like, yep, this was recorded, she got injured, and she's out for 9 months. So, Shotzi just hopped down off the apron, then was then in the picture-in-picture just holding her knee the entire time, and because it was picture-in-picture, we got to see everything, where she's like taken to the back, unable to put any weight on her leg. Then Lyra just standing in the ring as the new idea is just scrambled together backstage. Good thing this episode was recorded. So there was a, for me, quite clear edit in the Lash Legend match earlier in the show. So they obviously did do some editing in it. And you know what, for NXT, which is half developmental, half TV show, like, that is perfectly fine to be in an edited state. I'm absolutely fine with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Obviously, some of the edits, quite funny. But yeah, it's like, yeah. But yeah, it absolutely sucks. This, in the main event as well, to get such an injury that takes you out for possibly nine months. So almost nothing in the way that it happened. so strange. Anyway, the scramble together idea was an open challenge, so that at least the show had a main event, and out came Lash Legend. Legend had defeated Kalani Jordan like one segment earlier, so yeah, she was still in her gear. She was backstage and grand to go. And credit to them for this completely improvised ending to the show. Not the end of the world for Lash Legend to get, ending up getting a showcase like this too. Big splash off the top rope for the win, Velvet Kier. Obviously the match isn't like a lot to sing about, but you got Legend accidentally getting like a huge elevation match and showing her in this spotlight. With the absolute huge unfortunate thing with Shotzi, you did get the swing of Lash Legend getting this awesome little moment for herself. So yes, a thing to get better for Shotzi, but it's so innocuous. It's so unfortunate. The show opened up with the NXT North American Championship, Oberfemi versus Lexus King. No entrances, like we're on Rampage. The champion with it versus the challenger actively without. Over in under 5 minutes, powerbomb down, and Lexus King was distracted by X Division champion Robbie E. And King just destroying him. Rightfully after the distraction. It kind of took me by surprise that the match was so short, but then also I was like, yeah, I didn't want it to be longer. That's absolutely fine. Yeah, whatever. Our new NXT Tag Team Champions got their celebration, which was interrupted by Chase Yu. And, oh God, like, this was what I was talking about, where some of the edits, not as good as others. So there was a badly mixed cheer when Andre Chase said, "This is a cheerable moment." Right after the actual crowd were giving us a Chase You Sucks cheer, with them so behind the Wolf Dogs, they then put in a woo, yay, like loud cheer for Chase You, and then they edited it back down. It's like, it's not the worst mix I've seen with WWE, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Where I can actively see them not cheering. I can actively see it. And then they inserted it with a bad mix. Fraser and Axiom were out next. Still makes me laugh that they have Axiom presented like every other lad in these segments, in spite of being dressed like a lucha superhero. Let's have him come out and just be like, "Well, yeah, I'm going to get in that ring, and we're going to show you why we're the best." It was like, "What? Why have you got him being so regular and normal?" Even in the backstage segments, Fraser and Axiom would talk together, and their segments talking to each other would be of the very exact same way as it would be two other characters. Like, it's so strange. They've obviously got him doing a different entrance, but aside from that, he's presented as such like he's just normal, which is really strange. It's really strange. Surely you want to frame this guy as being like fitting of that kind of superhero visual that he gives, but instead he's presented and produced just like every other normal lad. It's so strange. I don't get it. Later in the show, we also got Chase U versus the Flying Lads. Don't know what the name is called, so that's what they're called. Chase winning after a succession of near falls. But the bigger story was that this whole thing was setting up the Good Brothers turning up in NXT. Yeah, those young startups, Gallows and Anderson, attacking everybody. And hey, it's something for them to do, isn't it? It's something for them to do, isn't it? So they cut a promo later off in the show as well. And I wouldn't say they looked massively enthused or whatever, but, you know, they're there. I mean, they'll bring so much experience down to NXT. Obviously, I don't know how they feel about being on NXT. Do they feel like it's a bit of a demotion or whatever? But they weren't doing anything on SmackDown, and now that they're not with AJ Styles, like, this felt like it was... So I understand the idea for AJ Styles. Like, to move on, he kind of does have to move past the Bullet Club, and the club, like, the era of that has moved on. But it does feel strange that AJ does that and they're immediately back down. Like, they weren't being used at all before AJ came back. And they'd walk out with Mia Yim now, who's getting a good stride. But yeah, why not send them down to NXT? There's a lot more of a link now between NXT and the main roster. It's not the away lands where the guy running the main roster doesn't know what it is anymore. Like, they're properly linked. You've got something like Bron Breakker, where he's getting stuff on SmackDown, but he's also the NXT Tag Team Champion, so he's appearing on both shows at the same time. Like, sometimes you get Tiffany Stratton, where she's taken up immediately. But the fact there is that link where you are getting talents across both shows. But yeah, also, Ariana Grace continues to be great. even if she is in her loser to the stars phase of her NXT run, I feel like she's doing such good work. And the cape she came out with, which is almost like a, it's almost like an award statue in herself. Yes. Everything about this character is working for me. I absolutely love it. And that is the end of the NXT review. There wasn't really a lot to talk about. It wasn't a show that had a lot going for it, but it did have the championship matches bookended and the unfortunate injury to Shotzi. It's like, that sucks. And that is the week of WWE. A week that started with The Rock and Roman Reigns and ended with an improvised main event for the Young Uns. Of course, Monday Night Raw was what was quite a lot to talk about. It felt like it's doing a pretty good job of amping up Elimination Chamber, which is what I'll be starting the show with this time next week. So this time next week, we will know what on earth is going on from the Raw side. We already know with the SmackDown side kind of what they're building to, but here, we finally get it decided. Also, a massive shout out to the Bayley segments and stuff. They're doing really well with Damage Control and building that up. This week was a bit more low-key, just because they've had two big weeks back-to-back. And it was kind of time for just other people to have their breathing room. You got time to build to April. You got a full month, so we're going to see it again. It's absolutely fine. I mean, there's no Rock and Roman. You got time to film next week. Bayley can maybe main event next week, because the Chamber stuff is Raw sided anyway. With that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back next week to talk about the Chamber, Raw, and NXT. If I feel like talking about NXT, sometimes at the pay-per-views, I just let the pay-per-views flow out and take the time. And with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.